Hello everyone, welcome to All Things Relationship Podcast, a one-stop solution for all your relationship queries and questions. Here you will find everything from people's stories, experts on panel, and some great knowledge that can help you make love real and perfect. So let's jump right in.
Hi, Reji. Welcome to All Things Relationship Podcast. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Nishant. How are you doing?
I'm doing really great. Just a beautiful morning over here in India.
So yeah, totally opposite from where I'm from. Right now it's 10:50 p.m. in the nighttime in Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
That's lovely. I want to visit Toronto one day.
You should. You should. We'll welcome you with open arms.
Thanks a lot.
Cool.
You had a breakup ever?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Plenty.
Plenty. Okay.
I have a lot of data.
Ooh.
So this should be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be really fun. So, Reji, let's start with a bit of your story. How would you say your story starts?
Starts at the beginning. Once upon a time, right?
Yeah,
so my story begins like this. Born and raised in Canada, Markham was the city. It's just outside of the city of Toronto. It's actually north of the city. I have an older sibling. Her name is Melissa. We're 7 years apart. And we both grew up with our two parents, fortunately. And my parents come from the Caribbean. My dad from Barbados and my mom from Grenada. They both met down in Canada, in Toronto, actually. They both work for the government. So, you know, they say don't mix business with pleasure, but they broke those rules, that's for sure. And as a result of breaking those rules, I came to life, right?
Yeah.
But grew up in Markham, and back in those days, it was super underdeveloped. There was hardly any houses out there. And, you know, it's a suburb, so very quiet, you can imagine that, right? Outside of the city. But growing up, you know, we are minorities, obviously, you know, being black and being, you know, in an environment where, you know, dominated by predominantly the white culture. Mm-hmm. So going to elementary school, I was like considered like the odd person out. You know, in my grade, I was like one of three black people in the entire school. I'd probably say that there was less than 50 black students in the entire school. Wow. So you could just imagine how, you know, my childhood was, right? Always feeling like the outsider, didn't really know my place. You know, it's funny because I've talked about this story in the workshops that I do for university students, and I kind of walk them through my elementary school history and then high school. And it was always just being that outside person looking in and trying to fit in. You know, there would be times where I would come home crying from school because I would go to my mom. I'm like, Mom, my hair, it's, you know, the kids keep on making fun of my hair. They always want to touch my hair because it's so different. And there were times where I'm just like, I want my hair to be like Michael's, Mom. I want it to be like Michael's. Make it straight. Make it straight. And I'll start crying. She's like, no, don't worry. Just your hair is just your gift. It's like, it's what makes you unique. But because I was, you know, one of three black people in my grade, it was really tough to fit in. And, you know, there were racially misunderstood kids, even in grade three, where one time I had a peer call me the N-word. And that was tough taking that in. And I always used to wonder, like, where does this come from? Right? Why is this kid calling me this? Because it's obviously a racially charged derogatory name. But that was kind of the cycles that I had to go through you know, going up in elementary school, trying to figure out where I fit in. You know, hip hop, there was, you know, growing up in the 90s, you know, hip hop was flourishing. And because, you know, I'm surrounded by a lot of white people, I didn't have that hip hop background that a lot of people expected me to have in high school when I finally transitioned. Okay. So when I got to high school, they're like, okay, do you know such and such artist? And I'm like, nah, who's that? Right. Cause I grew up on techno, like, cause I was trying to fit in, cause I grew up with like a lot of Italians, right. Uh-huh. Even growing up with a lot of Italians, I always thought that I had to be with an Italian girl. So when it came to like relationships, you know, my mindset was I'm exposed to a lot of Italians. That's what I'm going to probably end up with. I didn't have a lot of black people around me. So I didn't know if that was going to be the type of girl that I was going to eventually be with. But yeah, when I transitioned into high school, I wasn't considered black enough because I didn't know all the hip hop artists. You know what I mean? I still had a lot of white friends.
Uh-huh.
And okay. now I'm thrown into high school where there's now a lot more black people. So I'm like, okay, I'm trying to like figure out, okay, do I hang out with the black people now? Do I hang out with the white? Like I'm kind of in between.
Yeah.
So I was just going back and forth between the two crews. And even like the Italian crew would be like, shouldn't you be hanging out with your brothers? So it's just like, okay. Right.
Yeah.
To sum my elementary school and high school story, it's was really just really trying to figure myself out, try to figure out where I needed to fit. Even in the corporate world, when I eventually, you know, graduated from university and went to my first job, same setting. I eventually mm-hmm. climbed up the corporate ladder to a point where I'm now sitting in with executives. I'm not an executive, but I would actually have a seat at the table when it came to presenting concepts, business cases, and you know, so forth. And I would look around the table and it's just me in terms of being a black person. But what I would say to that is everything that I've experienced in elementary school and high school prepared me for this very moment, because now I know how to intermingle with the different cultures. Because if you remember, I know how to mix and mingle with the Italians. I knew how to mix and mingle with the Chinese. I knew how to mix and mingle with the blacks. I knew how to mix and mingle with Indian people, because I was always that type of individual where your skin color, it didn't matter to me. Yeah, like honestly, that's my story. That's like a whirlwind story in terms of like my background, in terms of being that outsider, though, that outcast, and being to a point now where I'm so comfortable in my own skin. I'm always about diversity and inclusion. Like I facilitate workshops right now for mm-hmm. colleges and universities students, and I'm trying to help them succeed post-graduation. I also work for a software company, 9 to 5, you know, within the marketing department. So I really love that culture, really great culture.
Wow.
And, you know, I do a podcast myself. We kind of put that on pause with COVID-19, but you know, I forgot the most important piece, because we're gonna talk about this,
mm-hmm.
especially when it comes to relationships. Is I have two kids. Wow. I have a son that's 17 years old, okay. And I have a daughter that's 10 years old.
You literally just give life to the example. Throw me to the wolf, I'll come back leading the pack. It was with Italians. Now you are like, okay, I can mingle with anyone.
Anybody. You throw me into a room with anybody. Purple people, blue people, yellow people, green. I'll mix and mingle with all of them.
Just, wow. That's certainly a skill everyone needs, you know?
Definitely. Like, you know, with everything that's been happening,
mm-hmm.
This year, especially with, you know, in the States with police brutality, all the protests and whatnot, I always say, like, and I know it sounds cliche, but there's only one race, and that's the human race, right?
Yeah, actually, I hope everyone understands this. The longer they're taking to understand it, more everyone is suffering. It's not just exactly. one race. Everyone is suffering.
Everybody's suffering.
Yeah.
Think if you and I'm glad you said that everybody's suffering, because the way I look at it is they're suffering because the media is just trying to expose it on a daily basis, and that negative exposure gets into everybody's psyche.
Yeah, and precisely. It's the media that has huge responsibility in this matter. If they're focusing on the positive things, it's gonna spread positivity. Right now, they're focusing on negative things because, well, it sells. People get a high knowing that the other person is having it worse.
Mm-hmm.
It's like
true.
Satisfying their ego.
Like, it's just the narrative that they want to, you know, kind of put ingrained in everybody's minds. And it seems as though they're just trying to pin everybody against it and create that segregation when it doesn't really have to be the case.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to have an impact with your podcast. I just found out you're a baby, so you just came out the womb yesterday. So you have a lot of runway. You have years. I'm so happy for you because I can't wait to see what 10 years looks like for you, especially the fact that you're doing this now.
I'm excited. I'm worried. So, all right. Reggie, what is your relationship experience? How do you see relationships today?
I have a lot of relationship experience. I've collected a lot of data over the years. Okay. Like a lot. And, you know, I'm in my 30s now.
Mm-hmm.
I would say late 30s. And in my 20s, when I was a spring chicken like yourself, which I'm so jealous of right now.
Okay.
It was different. Back then, we didn't have the apps, right? We had to master the art of the pickup. And that meant going to the club and actually talking to a girl, coming up with something creative to say to them so that they could respond to you. But even back then in the club, you'd actually just go up behind them and you'd dance with them. You could, you know, from behind, you dance, and it was okay. I think if you do that now, girls would just get all weirded out. Like, what are you doing, right? But I, you know, in terms of relationships, I had a baby at the age of 22. Age of 22. Okay?
Yeah. That's really tender, to take on such a huge responsibility.
Huge responsibility. When you think about the dynamics of a relationship back then, it was tough to juggle both the relationship and managing a baby, because at the end of the day, we were very in our mindset, which made it difficult to actually maintain the relationship. Because at 22, you don't really know who you are. You're still trying to figure yourself out, right?
Yeah.
And now you bring a baby into the mix. People don't realize that kids actually could put a strain on the relationship if there's not a solid foundation. Now, you know, being with the child's mother, we knew each other for like about a year, and then, you know, we're out having a baby. So we didn't have that solid foundation or time to actually really get to know each other, go through the stresses of what it actually meant to be in a relationship. Another dynamic that I learned is that, you know, I came from a two-parent household. She came from a single-parent household. So the concepts of managing a relationship were different as well. And you're a product of your own environment. What I mean by that is because she grew up in a single-parent household, her mom raised, you know, five kids on her own. Wow. So she felt, well, she could raise, you don't have to be in the picture. I could do it myself. Right. And I'm like, no, that's not how it works. Like, I come from a two parent household. We need to be together. Let's try to make this work.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
But what we were doing the whole time was you're trying to insert a square peg into a round hole. That's what we were doing, essentially. It just wasn't working. And what I mean by that is, her mentality is different. My mentality is different. We don't have the foundation. We now have this baby. It's just a recipe for disaster. And plus, we're young. Okay. So you fast forward, and I was always trying to make it work. We couldn't make it work. I don't even think we even celebrated a 1-year anniversary. That's how, you know, tumultuous the relationship was. It was a lot of back and forth. You know, when we were broken up, I would start dating. Now, you know, making myself available for other women. And, you know, going on dates was a thing. And one, I would say, mentality that I always had was being, I would say, lacking a little bit of confidence when it came to approaching women after having a kid, because you're like, okay, well, do I have a stigma now? Like, I have a kid. Is anybody going to want me? Right. So that came into play. So I didn't really take any girls serious because I didn't think they would have took me serious. And, you know, while I was going through the dating phase, eventually we figured me and the child's mom would try to work things out. We'd always say, okay, we'll eventually get back together. Didn't end up that way. We tried many times. And in the process of trying to make things work, baby number 2 came 7 years later. Right? Okay.
So it's the same parents.
Same mom. Yep.
Okay.
And now, obviously, we didn't plan on having kids at a young age, nor did we plan on having the second one. But at the end of the day, they're, you know, kids are blessings. Okay. Through that process, you know, after the second one, I was just like, oh, man, like, Reggie, what did you do, man? What did you do? And it took me a while to kind of get over the hump and realize, okay, well, you know what? We're going to deal with this. We're going to try to move on. I knew at that point, we're still not going to be together because we just didn't have that foundation. We weren't even living together. She's living at her mom's house. I'm living at my parents' house at the time. So if you think about the dynamics, we were never really together. So in terms of having a really solid foundation on what it meant to be in a relationship, get that experience, unfortunately. But I learned throughout the process on what not to do when you have the opportunity to be in one. And I also learned through the dating process, even after having my second daughter, because I eventually, you know, finally had a full-blown, what I felt, relationship. It was a solid relationship. It went for about 5 years. And I think the difference between me and, you know, my girlfriend at the time, who's now my ex, we had an age difference. We had a 9-year age gap.
Wow. Okay.
Okay.
That's considerable, really.
Yeah, considerable, especially when you do the math. But the one thing that stood, I would say, that stood out between her, like her and the rest of the, you know, the ladies or females in her age bracket was her mentality. She really had consider her an old soul. Okay. She had her head on her shoulders. She was ambitious. She knew exactly what she wanted. She had a lot of energy, which is good. And this is what I really wanted. She was affectionate. She was playful. She was totally the opposite of, you know, my child's mother, where my child's mother is very just strict, stern, structured, right? Don't touch me. Don't touch me between the hours of, like, if there's 24 hours in the day, I think I could only touch it for 5 minutes.
Ooh,
which,
okay.
which is kind of weird, because how did we have 2 kids, right? No, I'm just joking. No, I'm just joking. At the end of the day, I don't have any bad, you know, I don't wish anything bad. I don't have any ill will towards, whatever happened in the past. I always wish any of my exes, I really wish them well in life. That's just good karma. But yeah, so with the girl for 5 years, we eventually moved in together. We cohabitated. And what's funny is that the whole majority of my life, I was just with my parents, mm-hmm. right? And I didn't move out till I was like, I was 31, right? So 31, yeah, 31, 32. Okay. So I'm now going to be moving in with this girl, and I'm thinking she's mad cool. But one of my friends told me this: whenever you move in with a girl, he asked me the question, have you ever lived with a girl? I'm like, dude, you knew me my whole life, bro. Like, I've been at home. He goes, okay, well, wait till you move in. You'll see a different side. And I was like, nah, what's he talking about? What's he talking about? Even my other friend told me, like, oh, yeah, you'll see. Because there was one thing my other friends would tell me. One of my friends would say, oh, my God, like, I can't even, there's no intimacy with my wife. And I'm like, what do you mean there's no intimacy with my wife? Well, she wears these flannel pajamas. So I'm like, so what's wrong with that?
Like, yeah, actually, what's wrong?
It's not enticing enough. I'm like, and remember, this is me. My mentality is that I'm living at home. So the only type of, whenever I see my girlfriend, I don't see her in her flannel pajamas. I see her dressed up. But I didn't get the concept of what it meant to see your wife every single day in these flannel pajamas, ponytail, no makeup, nothing's happening. She's tired all the time. So I didn't understand that. I'm like, don't worry about whatever she's wearing, because I think whatever you're going to do that gives you pleasure, you're not going to have to wear clothes, I think, right? Or maybe, I don't know, whatever you're into. That's none of my business. Uh-huh. But all I'm saying is that look past the flannel pajamas. Get to the good part. I had no concept of what it meant until I actually lived with a female, and you see there's a difference. And I understood what he was talking about. But nonetheless, we cohabitated together, and she was really, we had a really good dynamic. But I always felt, because she was younger, mm-hmm. and we talked about it, that I would have to give her a baby. The key word was have to.
Yeah, that's what I was focusing on now.
So I said at the beginning of the relationship, yeah, why not? I'll give you a baby. Mm-hmm. But as the relationship progressed, you see certain things. You start to see the flannel pajamas. You start to see this person getting tired all the time.
Okay.
And I know you're laughing and smiling, but I'm fine with that.
So yeah, if you blindly and mindlessly follow something, it's just going to be a disaster, because you're not understanding your heritage, you're not understanding someone else's mindset, where they come from, what exact, environment they're in or mindset they're in, that they're taking these steps.
Well, that's the part that I definitely want to get to when we're having this conversation, because the data that I've extracted from these experiences has taught me that very thing that you mentioned. It's the mindset. I think in order for a successful relationship to actually work, you need to have similar mindsets. And, the mindset is never going to be the same, but if it's similar in nature, in terms of construct, in terms of concepts, in terms of how you guys think,
yeah,
and can relate, that's just one aspect of it. The other aspect is, okay, well, what's the core? What's holding you guys together? And depending on what religion you are, whatever religion you are, it doesn't matter. But if you guys share that same religion, whoever you put your faith in should be at the center, holding you two together.
True. Okay. I actually had put this on the same Cocktails with Jello session, same or another one actually, that when you're in getting into a relationship, you need to have some common ground to build a foundation on. And then you need to have a different, what can I say, ingredients to build up the structure and the things. Think of it like this. You have common ground. That's the foundation of a building. Now, one of you is building the structure. The other one is decorating it. So you also should have that differences, which you can discover into each other and hence generate interest about each other. Because if you are just too similar or kind of identical, then there's nothing to discover. You'll just get bored because you already know everything. You already have every other experience.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. You're right. You hit the nail right on the head in terms of the ingredients, making sure that you have the foundation, commonalities, share similar interests, and the connection has to be there.
The connection has to be there. Our today's guest, Reggie Waterman, is a product marketing expert, a brand consultant, and a workshop facilitator based out of Toronto, Ontario. But that's not it. Behind the scenes, or I should say on the screen, Reggie is an actor, a model, and a lifestyle and fitness icon as well. So let's dive in into this really interesting conversation with Reggie. And before that, why don't you tell our guests about your podcast?
Oh, that podcast. So the podcast that I have with my co-host is called Pod About Nothing. So it's an interesting question when you say, okay, can you tell the folks about your podcast? And I always say, well, it's really about nothing. So the Pod About Nothing is derived from the show Seinfeld. Have you seen the show Seinfeld? Are you aware of that? No. See, 23. So we kind of made our podcast kind of in similar fashion where we could really and truly talk about anything. We've talked about, you know, transitioning over to being a vegan. We've talked about, you know, the 5 rules of FaceTime, because people don't really talk about how to FaceTime properly and they all make a lot of mistakes. Mm-hmm. We've talked about adulting.
Okay.
And you'll figure that out in 10 years, but adulting.
I need that one.
Yeah, but honestly, it's just us two. We're two characters on the show, so we don't. It's a play on our names. So my co-host, his real name is Nick Waddell, and his stage name or pod name is Nick Flair, and I'm the Regolution.
Okay, that's an interesting pick for sure.
This was the first half of this episode. For the second part, stay tuned. It's coming up right ahead.